This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. It's 7 p.m. on the 28th of May, and you are listening to podcast number 154. My name is Peter Higgins. You can find me at Conquers3 on Twitter. And I'm here with my brilliant co-host, Henry Viola Hare. You can find him at HTViola on Twitter X, and also on Blue Sky app, and myself on Blue Sky app as well. And you can find us on LinkedIn if you're on LinkedIn. You know, so here we are, Henry. 2 weeks on after the pod with Sam Bell, where we spoke about all things to do with investing, trading, and also the Investor Summit. The feedback we've had so far, what do you want to say about that, Henry? All the stuff that happened regarding that pod?
It has been absolutely fantastic. I really enjoyed having Sam on the show. Great to have him. And all the way from South Africa as well. I think that's probably our longest distance guest we've ever had.
I think it probably is, Henry. And it did mess with my audio, though. So apologies for those that picked up on the poor audio and the, you know, sometimes you couldn't even hear me. So the recording was a bit impacted by that. But the quality of what Sam had to share was excellent, wasn't it?
Oh, fantastic. Great to have him on. And I think great as well to hear about this Investor Summit event in August. You know, It's been a huge revelation to be able to get that out on social media. I've had loads of people contacting me about it. We've got a great lineup coming. I mean, obviously, we are there. You know, I don't want to put that in too bold lights, but we are there. So, no, it's fantastic.
When Henry says we are there, we're there as Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. We're in the broom cupboard at the back, if anyone wants to come and see us personally. There's a room for about five individuals to come and see us. Yeah, the main draws are the stellar individuals from the bigger companies. Is that about right, Henry?
Yeah, that sounds about right. I mean, I might be doing autographs and T-shirts by August, but I think a Twin Peaks T-shirt with our faces on it would be fantastic.
Yes, I think more so pictures with squirrels on. With your name
pictures
on one of the squirrels
and
me on one would probably sell a bit better than our faces, Emma. Yeah?
Fantastic stuff. Fantastic.
Yeah. So we had Sam Bell, the other co-founder of the Investor Summit, on the pod. We had some fantastic feedback regarding the pod. Start with at Dave73S, and congratulations to Dave if he's listening. He will be listening. He's absolutely ecstatic, because his beloved Charlton Athletic have been promoted and they've gone up to, I think it's League One, isn't it? So the next stage is to try and get into the Premier League. So congratulations to the Dave and Charlton. So Dave's feedback was, great podcast again, guys. Good to hear a guest that, like me, trades as well as invests. So many different ways to play the stock market. So thank you for that, Dave. We had the Reluctant Investor. Great interview with Sam and discussion on commodities. Extra bonus as no squirrels were harmed in the making of this pod. Thumbs up and clap. Clap, clap in there. Matthew Gregory, our former guest. Thank you, Matthew, for your feedback as well. Another excellent pod. I have some thoughts on the ongoing issues with UK's pensions investing in the UK. Whilst I agree with them, with that legislating minimum percentage, it's not the way to go. It is worth looking at the mid-tier countries like Australia and Canada, what they have done. I believe that they have an 8 to 10% invested locally. I actually looked at the stats, and in Australia, I think it was 4% they've got locally invested, and in Canada, 21.2% or something like that. But however, they're tweaking the superannuation they've got in Australia, and that might be impacting what they invest locally going forward. So,
I thought it was an awful lot higher than that in Australia, yeah, if I'm honest.
I might have my numbers mixed up there, and I'm trying to remember off recall from 2 weeks ago. A lot's happened since then. You'd have to have a look at if you can find my tweet replying to Matthew whilst we're having a conversation, then the stats are there. Up-to-date stats are there, but it's not as high as we thought it was, I think. Invest like a sloth. Great discussion, taking in different investment lenses, research ideas, and investing psychology, along with a superb guest. Excellent as always. Then we get to the point where we're talking to Trader Mark, who has been drawing and using AI to produce some fantastic sort of what do you call it? Graphics, is that the
Artwork.
right word? Artwork. So and he put great listen, chaps. Investor Summit sounds exciting. We'll check the diary. And he had some nice artwork that he shared with us regarding that. HD Viola confirms hashtag QRL IPO on track, though not sure the gold panning in tailings opportunity is for me. Resource is not really my bag, hence the pictures that he showed the both of us panning for gold, Henry. Yeah.
Beautiful, beautiful stuff.
Beautiful. And then, of course, we had some comments about the summit, and some people have already started buying tickets. At Sun Sanetti One, took day off, got my tickets. Smiley face, see you soon. And then Roger Green, our brilliant, consistent fan there, Roger Green and supporter. Great to see Sam on the show, joining the podcast and sharing news of the great new event in London this August. Just bought my early bird ticket and I'm looking forward to it. Hashtag Investor Summit. So anybody that's interested in getting their early bird tickets, all they have to do is visit www.investorsummit.co.uk and grab your tickets early, because they're going to be going like hotcakes going forward. Can I just mention the people we've got so far, Henry? Would that think be right
Yeah,
to just run
please
over
do.
this sense again? And you guys have to listen right to the end because of the opportunity to win a pair of tickets. I'm going to tell you about it later on. So as I mentioned, I think I've covered most of these, but we've got some additional individuals here. We've got Justin Urquhart Stewart. I think I mentioned him before. We've got AJ Bell on board regarding the event. Charles Hall at the moment has given us a question mark now. He's a prolific individual
Charles
from
Hall
Peel
is a
Hunt.
legend.
Yeah, exactly. So it depends on his holiday plans. I think his boss is sorting out holiday. So if his holidays are sorted out,
We'll fly him
and
in
there's a
specially.
clash, yeah, we might have to just put him on, on the screen. He will be there. If not, we won't have him, unfortunately. Simon French from Panmure Liberum, another legend of the
Another
game.
legend, yeah.
Stephen Yu, Blue Whale Capital, and Blue Whale Capital will be spot are the platinum sponsor of the event thus far. John Stepak will be there from Bloomberg, the Association of Investment Companies, AIC. Annabelle Brody Smith will be there. Polar Capital, we've got Alistair Unwin at the moment, being the main person from Polar Cap. We've got another one of their team potentially coming as well.
Oh,
Will Fenner
fantastic
from London
team.
Stock Exchange. Say again?
Fantastic team at Polar Capital.
Yeah,
So if you've not seen them present before at an event, I highly recommend making sure you see them. Really, really great speakers.
absolutely, absolutely. We've got Will Fenner from the London Stock Exchange. We've got ShareScope potentially going to be with us as well, as we do our live Twin Peaks presentation. We don't have Algie Hall, unfortunately. I think I mentioned that last time. We do have Moira O'Neill, FT Money columnist. And we've got Robert Crayford. There was a bit today about CQS Natural Resources, Henry, about them having a standstill moment with Sabah. So they're going to do this and do that to appease them, and they're going to stay off their back for at least a year. But Robert's going to be available to answer all sort of queries and have conversations with various people on there when he presents the show. We've got Lord Lee, the first ISA millionaire, which is good. He's been at quite a few different
Oh,
events.
lovely.
We've got
I
Ray
think
Coke,
that was the first interview I ever heard you do, your lordly interview. And I went back and listened to it twice. It was that interesting. A
yeah,
long time
that's
ago.
it's a long time ago. Not one of my best interviews. I think I was so nervous. It's not often you get invited to the House of Lords and you sit in front and sitting there. You go, my heart was just coming out of my chest, going, "What am I doing here?" Doing it all on my little own and a little camcorder. And every time he banged the table, he was like Jurassic Park. You see the water near him just shaking like that. Oh my days! Yeah, good times, good times. Lisa Ashford, MBE, CEO of FX. We've got ShareSoc there. I believe we've got Emma Bird being involved in one of the panel sessions as well. We've potentially got CISI there as well, because we're going to be doing CIPD points for the individuals. And we've got loads more of investment trusts and listed companies to announce at later stage, but I'm not giving it all away just yet. But go and visit the website, have a look at what's going on, keep getting updated with it, and buy your tickets early before the price of it has to go up. Because at the moment, the early bird tickets, every single ticket we sell, we're already losing money on it. So get your tickets if and when you can, folks. Visit www.investorsummit.co.uk. Where do you want to go next,
Spectacular.
Henry?
Well, I think there are 2 points. So we had a lot of feedback on Twitter over the last 2 weeks, a lot about the summit. I realized to my shame last night, I have not replied to a single person on our YouTube channel. Usually I'm very good at it. I pop on and I say, hi, how are you doing? Thanks for watching. I've not replied to anybody in the last 2 weeks. I'm dreadfully sorry about that. I've been frankly inundated at the office and it just slipped my mind. We have had quite a few comments on YouTube. William Brown, a long-standing podcast listener, great episode, struggled with the audio a little bit, but then was deafened when I spoke after he turned up to hear you. I'm sorry about that. That's not the usual audio quality we go for, but you'll know that as a long-standing listener. The Welsh Matt, I do believe that might be Matt Gregory, another
Believe
excellent
so,
pod
yeah.
guys. Terry Vaughan. Now, Terry did write to me as well on my blog, sent me a very, very nice note, just saying that he enjoyed my articles, always enjoyed reading them, found them insightful. I'd just written a piece based on the classics and learning that you could take from the classics to apply to your investing journey and your investing methodology. And Terry says another first-class podcast with thanks to Sam for being a special guest. We are all learning and no one knows everything. And that is just so
Awesome.
true, Terry.
Spot on.
We're here and I'm learning all the flipping time. I can tell you that. I can tell you that. But we
Every day is
wanted.
a school day, Henry. That's why.
Well, there you go, you see. I'm barely out of school anyway, so the One of the comments we did get, and I noticed this flying in today when I was in between meetings, somebody asked about the takeover offer for Global Data. The ticker is DATA. Now, this one drove me absolutely crackers because you mentioned it on the podcast, I'm going to say in the last 18 months. And I thought, what an interesting business. I'll go away and look at it. And I went away and looked at it and came to the conclusion, what an interesting business. And then I did nothing. And now it's had two takeover offers. One bidder, I think it was KKR, has walked away recently. But another one, ICG, is actually still engaged and still doing their due diligence on a potential offer. Now, this chap on Twitter, I'm sorry, I've forgotten the handle, but they asked what our thoughts were. And to me, the fact that we've had two takeover offers is a very bullish signal. It validates the strategic value of Global Data's business. And I remember from the last time we talked about this, Peter, you said that Global Data is actually the second time that the CEO has done this. He's already built one of these sorts of businesses, sold it for a massive premium, and he's back again doing it again. So he knows what he's doing. And clearly, others in the market have seen the value in that. You've got lots of features I like, the recurring revenue base. It's a subscription-based business, which tends to have fairly sticky customers, and it's in that sweet spot of data. The new oil rush is data, as they've been saying for 10 years. They're still saying it now. I don't know if it still counts as new after 10 years, but you get the idea. Now, the
But
fact
so
that
let me
KKR.
just interrupt you just 1 second there, Henry. The person that asked the question was at MGS Cheney.
Okay.
And I put a tweet out this morning saying Global Data extends ICG bid deadline to June 11th for them to make a firm takeover over offer. Meanwhile, KKR walks away, no intention to make an offer for Data Global. for Data Global Data PLC. And he came back and said, "I'm a holder of data. Would love to hear your take on this scenario. Two bidders walks away. Sorry, two bidders, then one walks away, one stays. How do you read this?" So I just said, "Look, we're on the pod tonight. We will discuss it." So here we are.
I mean, for me, you've got to think about this as a shareholder. You are ultimately a shareholder. I'd like to think you're of the investing sort of persuasion rather than the trading sort of persuasion. But regardless, to me, if I own this right now, I'd be holding. You're in a position where two significant strategic players have seen some value in this. Even if ICG walk away from the deal, they've seen value at a higher share price than what it was. It remains a cash generative business. It's a high margin business, and it's in a structurally growing niche. This is a quality company here. The current market cap, and I think it's somewhere around 1.5 billion, already prices in some of the optimism that this deal might go through. And fine, okay, if ICG walk away, you're probably going to see some of that fall back. But long term, the fundamentals of this business likely support a recovery. And I would suggest that this is, if you liked it originally, it's still a very, very good company. And I'd be watching management. I'd want to see what their actions are saying, what press releases are they putting out, what updates can you see about what they're doing inside the company. If they sound constructive about ICG and the terms, that's a good sign. But even if they pivot back to business as usual, if ICG walk away, I think this is something that's got some long-term potential to it. So I personally would probably be sitting tight on this for now.
I would always couch it, Henry. I agree with you in the sense of the long-term value in the company. And KKR are no slouches. They're looking and they probably wanted to buy it at a bargain price. At present, no price has been spoken of when they both actually went for the company. But looking back at the price, it was around April 29th. It was £1.35. And then when there was rumors of these two bids and these two companies and KKR involved and ICG being involved, you're then going into the high reaches of 180 odd towards 190. So you're looking at already 45% move on that share price from 29th of April. We've spoken before about takeover premiums ranging from, being stolen sub 20% premium to 30, 35, 40, 50, 60% premium. You've already got 40% premium ish from 135 to 180 odd to 190. I'm of a view now, if you were buying it nearer the 140s and it's now at 185 ish, and the two bids were there and one's walked away, I would take a little bit off the table. If I was just bought it for that takeover, if I just wanted that premium on what I bought it at, what's the value of in the short term of data? Probably £2, right? So at 186, 185, you're looking at them coming back and saying, "Yes, we've been talking to you, we've been having discussions with you, we've told you what we want to buy. You've not disclosed that to your shareholders." Going back to April the 29th, we're now offering you a, what would be a 50% premium at £2 and two pence. And it's currently at 184. If they walk away and don't offer that £2, or £2 and two pence, 50% premium, that share price is going to go between 135 and 185. In the middle there, you've got 30 pence. What's that? £1.50. So you're gauging 15 pence bonus up there, or potentially losing 30, 35
Yeah, I mean that is
on a
a
short
reasonable
term, on a
point.
short term basis. On a
Yeah.
long term basis, you bought it, you didn't plan to have it taken over, you're waiting for it to go to 180. It's actually 185 now. If you're looking for it to hold it for the next 3 or 4 or 5 years, then sit tight.
Yeah. And that's
But if
generally
you're a
where I
trader,
find myself with takeovers, and it I don't think I've ever bought something on the idea that I'm going to have it taken out. If a takeover offer comes along, sometimes I'll go, okay, right, that looks like a reasonable premium. But my reaction most of the time is actually, I don't want it taken out. If I don't want to own it, I'll sell it. I don't want to sell it. I'm being forced to sell it through a takeover offer.
Yeah.
I think
Yeah,
it's
but
potentially got more legs.
I tend to do a bit of both, Henry, in the sense of I love to try and analyze and find and try and figure out what is the intrinsic value or the sum of the parts. So looking at global data down at 130 odd, I'd have been thinking, I know this is worth £2 all day. Yeah. And I spoke about this before. So I you know, whether I missed it or whatever, I don't actually own the stock. For those that are saying it, oh, Pete's ramping a stock that he owns, I don't own any of the stock. If I'd had my eyes on it and got in at 135 and then it popped with two bids, I'd have been thinking, right, okay, what did I say it was worth? I said it was worth 205. It's now sitting at £1.90 when it absolutely flew off, when everyone was after it. I'd have been looking to just, for the sake of 15 pence, I'd have gone, let me take some off the table just in case both of them walk away. You've got one of them still involved now. Yeah. And if that other one walks away because the management are saying, we want 215, we want 220, we want whatever, 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 whatever. ICG are going to go, guys, you're £1.35 a little while back, last month. Yeah. Or a month and a half ago. We're here offering you £1.85 or £1.90 or £2. Take it. Now we want more than that. The share price will just go wallop. And we've seen that happen so many times with so many stocks that have had
Oh yeah,
bids
for
and,
sure. And
you
I
know.
think and that comes back to your mindset about what your portfolio is for. And ultimately you're there to make money. You're not doing this for you. Fundamentally, you are trying to make a profit out of this. And if I said to you, right, give me £10,000 today, I'll give you 14,000 back tomorrow. You'd rip my arm off. You'd be emptying your bank account out to give it me.
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing Podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
If I said to you, give me £10,000 and in 6 months I'll give you 14,000 back, you'd do the same thing. If I said to you, do it over 2 years or 3 years or 5 years, and I can't tell you at which point you're going to make that extra 40%, all of a sudden, you're a bit unsure about it. Your psychology starts to shift. And this is something actually I want to come back to later in the episode. But your original intention behind buying this business was because you thought it was a good investment. That's my original intention. I'm investing in a company I want to own a part of. Just because somebody's come along and made a takeover offer doesn't fundamentally mean that my opinion of that business has now shifted. And you can end up artificially, you can both end up being artificially greedy, like you say. Oh, well, I want £2.20, even though it was at 130 a month ago. And what are you doing? But at the same time, you can end up artificially convincing yourself it's only worth £1.80. It'll never get to £2.20 or £2.50 or £3 because
Absolutely
KKR's
spot on.
come along and will only offer £2. So weighing that up, the only way I've found to balance my emotional state and my psychological state towards that is to look at the business. Would I still want to own this today, regardless of what KKR or IGC is doing, or ICG, I should say, and try and concentrate on that as opposed to the noise and the press around what these takeover offers are doing.
All of that, plus looking back at when it had a bid the previous time, what sort of prices were talked about then. The business has improved since 2 year ago, 3 year ago. So it should be in and around the same sort of metric, if not more. Just because it's a UK company doesn't mean it should be given away cheaply. So all of those in the equation, mate. And also, Henry, we've got to take into consideration, we'll talk about this a bit later on about regarding the topic you've got. It depends on what sort of investor you are. And obviously we've got some individuals that are traders. They saw the opportunity at 135.40, had a pop because of the takeovers. They've long gone. Interesting one.
It comes back to knowing your psychology. And again, like I say, if I said to you, I'll do you 40% a year every year, you wouldn't care how I gave you that 40%. Providing it's ethical, but you wouldn't care. You just want the 40%. But then you start putting labels on it, trading versus investing, and all of a sudden I've got an opinion about the 40%. The 40% doesn't care one way or the other how it's made. It's just money.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, that's global data. That also made me think about another company which a listener has asked about. We've actually had a few queries about this aimed at me, and I've not deliberately dodged it, I promise. I've just not had a chance to get my thoughts together, really. And it's on one of my top holdings, Chesnara, which I'm always a little bit sensitive talking about because I do own this. And so people are interested in my thoughts on it. Fair enough. So I'll give you an overview of what it does, a little bit about why I own it, and how to analyze or how I've analyzed it as an investment, without making a buy or sell recommendation on it, because I've owned this for a long time. So, do your own research, please, is all I would say before I deliver the next segment, if you like. So Chesnara, the ticker is CSN. Does what's called life insurance. It's a closed book life insurer. Now, this is a term in insurance, which means that the policies that are being managed by Chesnara are no longer available to the public. They were sold to people years and years ago. They exist as financial liabilities for someone somewhere in the world, HSBC or whoever. HSBC no longer want to have those liabilities on their books. They receive premiums for the policies. So I've insured my life for, say, £10,000 10 years ago. HSBC doesn't want to pay out if I kick the bucket tomorrow, right? So they sell that policy to Chesnara. Chesnara buy the liability, but they then also receive the premiums I would have paid to HSBC. They receive them themselves. So they specialize in what's called these closed book policies. The policy I bought to insure my own life is no longer available to Peter or, another member of the audience, even though as a financial instrument, it still exists. And Chesnara goes around the world buying these old, they don't buy individual policies on, say, just me or just Peter. What they'll do is they'll go to HSBC and they'll say, 10 years ago, you sold a type of policy to people like Peter, like Henry. You don't sell that policy anymore. We want all of the customers that you sold that policy to. We'll buy all of them off you. So if they'd sold 4,000 policies, we'll buy all 4,000 policies. We'll pay you a flat rate right now. If any of those policies come due, we'll pay out the liabilities, but we'll also take all of the premiums due in the future. And sometimes companies like HSBC will then also pay an additional sum to Chesnara to remove those liabilities from their books. Now, this type of business is very, very long term. The liabilities are incurred up front. Policies are paid out over many years, and liabilities are only incurred many years after the fact. So you need a good quality underwriter up front to price the policy. How do you know how much I need to pay over 30 years to make sure that by the time the life insurance is due, you're not losing money on the payout? As a result of that, they tend to be quite cash generative. The premiums that customers pay can be quite high. Those significant premiums are paid a long time in advance of the policies paying out. So companies like Chesnara tend to have very attractive yields. And I'm, as long-term listeners will know, I'm an income investor. I like my dividends, which is one of the reasons I was attracted to Chesnara. She's got a very attractive yield, typically in the 7 to 9% range. It's got a record of growing that dividend over sort of 17, 18 years, something like that. Grows it a little bit every year, even in downturns. The dividend is typically covered, which means it's not had to cut the dividend. I've got good visibility over what the dividend's going to be over the next couple of years. The management, very, very conservative. They're not running around buying 100,000 new policies every week. They do very selective, very careful acquisitions. And this is important to me because, again, they buy the wrong policies at the wrong price. They could blow the company up. And I won't know about it for years to come. So I like the fact that generally I've got this feeling of Chesnara as being quite conservative, quite a cautious, careful business. The business also gives me some diversification. So life insurance is totally different to an awful lot of other sectors. Like I say, very long term, very stable, very cautious, very traditional, doesn't tend to have enormous valuation swings. So it's a good diversifier for me. On the flip side of all of that it's also quite complex. And I've talked about this with insurance companies before with little segments we've done. You know, investing in something like Chesnara, you could listen to me talking about this and go, well, I'm an income investor. I like cautious businesses. I like dividends that increase every year. I'll go buy some. You will have no idea what Chesnara is buying, what price it's buying it at, or how it's managing it if you don't understand insurance policies and pricing. And I've spent hours listening to talks from the management of Chesnara about how they price their assets, how they buy their books, how they manage those books over many years to try to get a feel for what they're doing with life insurance and not just looking at the dividend and going, I like that. So ultimately, my thoughts on Chesnara, you know, I could go on and on and on about it, but it's not some high-tech glamorous growth story, right? This isn't going to be the next Google or Amazon or Palantir or whatever. It's a very sober, very steady, dividend-paying investment in a sector that rewards, in my opinion, prudence and patience, which are two words I like in investing. To me, it's a very solid, reliable play in what can be a very frothy market at times. I've never worried about it. I've never had sleepless nights with it. It's a bet on people knowing their numbers and knowing their maths and doing that maths accurately and correctly. And I like that. I can understand it. So lots of food for thought in there. If you do want to find out more, there's lots of talks from the management online. I'd recommend going and listening to some of the shareholder podcasts that they do, some of the shareholder presentations. There's a whole raft of them. Go and read the annual reports. But to me, it's the sort of investment that suits an income-focused investor quite well, someone that wants simplicity, minimal leverage, and a mature, regulated, mature regulated environment. This isn't something that's going to be changing every 6 months. So, food for thought.
A very solid company, Henry. Well spoken about there by yourself. It's been around for a good while. It's a compounder, that's what we called it, isn't it? It does what it says on the tin. It's trying to preserve people's capital, but also pay them for their patience. And as you say, it tends to go back to a lot of the larger banks and the other insurance companies that are trying to be a bit more aggressive regarding their what they want to do and their margins are going up. That's a little bit, we're moving away from that segment now. And then that, you know, you've got the likes of, I think the other one is probably Phoenix. Is Phoenix the other one
Yeah,
that does a similar
Phoenix
sort of thing?
Group. Yeah, they're
So
much bigger,
Phoenix and that,
Phoenix.
yeah, so that's probably their rival sort of company. So you probably want to compare the two and look at their long-term CAGRs on them in the sense of what's been the compounding rate over the past 5 to 10 years. I'm not sure what the diversification would be regarding the two of them. And total returns. But going back just to the 19th, Henry, and it said here Chesnara explores buying HSBC's UK life insurance business. So, again, if that's up on offer, they're going to be one of those companies going, they're now moving out of that segment or they're trying to cash in on what they had regarding that particular side of the or arm of the business. You know, Chesnara, potentially Phoenix and others. We'll then go over there and say, look, let's negotiate on the best price. And what you've just said there, Henry, is regarding Chesnara is that they're experts in that one particular segment. They've drilled down in that segment and they're one of the best in the game. So they know how to get the good price to not to be get buying the worst sort of assets out there. So they're not got any skeletons hidden as to what we had before when markets are being blown up by financial teams and insurance companies. So yeah, it's definitely one to consider. Chunky dividend, and there's one thing that most people have always said is that if a dividend is too high, it's often the risk that it's going to be cut. But Chesnara's dividend has been high for a long time, and I haven't researched it well enough to say it's never been cut. But consistently, they've been paying off dividends. So I'm not sure if it's been reduced or whatever, but
They've never
they've
had a
been
cut as
dividend
long as I've
paying.
owned them. And I think the
Yeah, there
other
you go.
thing that's worth pointing out, if you look at someone like Phoenix Group, who I also have a position in, the debt levels at Phoenix Group are significantly higher. Chesnara does not actually have a lot of debt.
Okay, it's good.
It Everything about it just screams caution and safety. And I like that because with an I wrote an article probably 2 years back about why I don't like financials. And ironically, I do actually own quite a few, but they're very,
So stop
very
there. So
difficult
stop
to
there. So what
understand.
changed? What changed? You didn't like them, then you started to like them because insurance companies are financials, essentially.
They are financials. What changed was the time I spent looking into them. So,
Ah,
to be honest, the
research.
whole article was geared around not having the time to understand this and it being a black box. And that
Yep.
I still think that's a perfectly valid criticism, of them. They are complex, they are difficult to understand. If you want to spend the time understanding them, they're understandable. But if you don't, then personally, I'd steer well clear because you just don't know what risks you're taking. And to me, that's more gambling than investing, to be honest. If you don't understand the risks you're taking, you like just steer clear.
Agreed. Agreed. That's a very good point. Very well made, Henry. Okie dokie. I'm going to go completely away from the insurance sector slash financials. I'm going to go to that place where you never want to go, Henry. And every time I mention this segment, you go, oh, no, I don't want to buy any of those sort of stocks. I'm going to go retail, Henry. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to keep it short and sweet, mate, because I don't want to put you through the pain. I know you're like, no, don't talk about that segment. I'm going to talk about, and I don't want to use the word austerity, but essentially you've got bargain range stocks that are bought by retailers. The shop is B&M, European Value
Oh.
Retail.
Go on,
Yeah.
shoot, shoot.
So we have got BME is a ticker, and it is principally engaged in operating discount retail stores. The company provides a broad range of merchandise, including food, alcohol, homewares, home textiles, small electrical goods, DIY products, garden-related products. Always need a garden gnome, Henry. Always need a garden gnome.
What for the
Groceries,
squirrels?
fast-moving consumer goods, and more. The group is organized in three operating segments: UK B&M, UK Heron, and France B&M stores. So recently, Henry, they came back with some numbers, and the share price rose on the day of the results, and they upgraded their profit forecast, and everyone rejoiced. The share price went up 7% that time. They also said they're increasing the number of their stores that they operate in across Britain and France. And Heron Foods was doing particularly well. And why are they doing so well? Because not only in France, but definitely in the UK, we have got more cash, I'll get this right, strapped shoppers, yeah, who have got a limited amount of money that they can actually spend on the goods that they purchase. So where do they go? They go to Aldi, they go to Lidl, they also go to the BME stores. So they've reported group sales up for the year, and they're basically doing the best that they possibly can, really, to ensure that they've got goods on the shelves for the people that are unable to shop at M&S and Sainsbury's. So that's my angle on this particular company, Henry. They're projected to increase their core earnings from £605 million to 650, 220, £625. So had a tough year. Pamela Liberum analysts are saying B&M shares are down 40, at that time were down 30% in the year, but now is a good time to actually consider buying the shares. So that's the reason why I'm talking about it. The other thing that piqued my interest with this one, Henry, is that they've now got a new CEO whose name I'm going to absolutely butcher. Tjeerd Jegen, it doesn't sound anything like that. Someone else will tell me it's completely right, is a new CEO,
Definitely doesn't sound French.
or going to be a new CEO, should I say, and will be taking the place of Mike Schmidt, the current interim chief exec, on the 16th of June. So 16, well, 3 weeks' time. Let's call him TJ because we know him already, don't we? will be the new CEO of the company. So I think that could be a catalyst for some change across the across Europe as well. So might be a bit of a shake-up, mate. He's got a broad international retail experience, having worked in leadership roles at Ahold Delhaize, Metro, Tesco's, Woolworths, HEMA, and Taco Fashions after over 25 years. So a bit more experience there could be pivotal for their growth in the UK and also across the rest of Europe. Current price is £3.38.5, forecast PE of 10.5, yield of 4.35, and it's a lower part of its 52-week range, which is £2.54 to £5.55. So it's sitting right there at the lower end. Might be an opportunity, might get more shoppers shopping there as the purses get squeezed in the UK. If you've never shopped at B&M, have you, mate? No.
I've been in a Harrods.
If that's a B&M store.
Yeah, you see.
It's part of the
No,
group.
the reason I pause is because I know this one, and the reason I know this one is because we talked about this BME, but I can't remember if it was you or Phil that mentioned it.
I think it might have been Phil a while back, mate. Yeah.
It
Yeah.
was.
And he
It
liked it.
was.
He liked it at the
He
time.
did.
And it's now even cheaper. So where are
Well,
you
there
at
you
with
go,
that
you
one,
see.
Emmy? Come on.
So
Smash it to ribbons.
Well, no, oddly enough, I mean, we know my spiel on retail, so let's not go there. But I like the value side of it. What I'm trying to do is not contradict whatever it was I said a year ago. And I can't remember what I said a year ago. But for consistency's sake, I think they're growing fast and they've got a lot of opportunity to grow from what I recall. But a lot of the model is based on them continuing this rapid expansion plan.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed.
And can just never get that excited about retailers. If I'm perfectly honest, as a business, from what I recall, it's a good operator, good quality metrics, and they've got a consistent track record of expansion, which, all of which is good. But consumers are fickle. I'm sure I saw the other day that Poundland has just been sold for a pound. It's gone into liquidation, and and this is in the value segment. If they can't make it work, and it's this sort of thing. You think it's an unbeatable story. It's an unbeatable brand. It can't possibly go wrong. It never has gone wrong. The expansion will continue forever. But when they go wrong, they really go wrong. And all of a sudden, you've got this 18-month rollout of stores across the whole of France that's booked in, and we've bought the sites, and we've got the staff, and we've borrowed the money. And oh, hang on a minute, but no one's going into the stores we've already got, and we're still rolling them out. And by the time the business realizes and tries to slow down, it's too late. You've already expanded by another 500 stores because you were going so fast. And then you end up getting sold for a quid to, Squirrel Inc. or whatever it is we're launching.
Yeah, it's a sorry tale regarding Poundland, mate. I'm hoping this is it's not going to be the case
I mean, I'm
for
not saying that's where I
BME.
think it's going. I just, I hesitate to get too excited about retail
No,
names.
I'm not that excited about it. I just think it's an opportunity here at this current price, and if things go the way that I think we could be facing in the second half of the year, when things start to kick on regarding the tariffs and all the other stuff that's going on, the taxes that's going on, we could be it could be a difficult 18 months going forward for us after things start getting a bit warped, and therefore the purse strings will be, we'll have to tighten,
The bit that gets me, so I've just called up the price graph on
Chesco,
Chesco. So 2021, it hits a high of 6 quid a share, promptly falls all the way down to 3 quid a share. What happened in 2022 to cause that? I'm not entirely sure. Then it goes all the way back up to 6 quid a share, and now it's gone all the way back down to £2.50 a share. And then all of a sudden, there's this bump. A huge bump where it shot up to 350. So it increases 50% in the space of 6 months on, on what news? To
Essentially,
me,
you've had some
this.
profit. You've had some profit warnings. It's been a strategy which they've been trying to apply, and on some occasions the speed of what they said was going to happen didn't happen. So the share prices then come down, profit warnings, share price gets high. It's like, oh, that's not going to work anymore. And then they've gone back out, they've lowered what their expectations are. Then they've exceeded that lowered expectations. The share price has a bit of momentum. They've come back and said, oh, actually, we're doing quite well in that segment. We bought some stores from X, Y, and Z who has now shut down. It gets a bit more momentum, and so on and so forth. And essentially, what you've got is there's been periods where we've had
Yeah,
higher
obvious. One
inflation
way
as well,
to view.
Henry. So they had to fight and combat that. So the share price has been very, very fluid, mate. Have you frozen on screen, Henry? Yeah. They're not paying
No, I'm
any
still
fees
with
in
you. Still with
Wimbledon.
you.
Yeah. So that's why the share price is where it is. So if you look at that chart, you said in between three and six is where it's been, and lower more recently. Then, if they continue with a bit of positive news and some momentum, maybe we can get it back up to 4 quid and 4.5. I'd seem to be
Yeah,
buying it now than I would have been at
it
six
could.
quid.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. And you know, and I remember having this conversation with a friend of mine back when this originally popped up on the podcast, and they loved it, and they were like, "I want some, I want some, I want some." And
Yeah.
I just couldn't bring myself. I mean, for one, I don't buy things that we've talked about, but secondly, I said, "Well, it's on a downward slope. This thing's going from 6 quid to 5 quid. You say it looks cheap. Now it's at 5.50. Now it's down at 4.50. Now it's back up at five. Now it's down at 3.50. You know,
Yeah.
this is going down. How much lower is it going to go? And how much more money are you going to lose tipping into this, trying to average in? You know, and what are you going to do if it goes down to £2.50, which it eventually did? Would you sell it, having started buying at £5, worrying that it was going down to £1.50?
Takes us nicely onto our topic, mate.
You know,
Yeah.
because I don't want that stress in my head. And actually, that does bring us on to our topic. Which, when Peter and I started these pods, we never used to have themes. We now developed this theme of the week sort of thing. And Peter called me up last night and he said, Henry, it's that time of the week where I have to remind you that you're on the podcast tomorrow. And I went, oh, crikey. My calendar's on the floor, upside down, face down. I didn't realize it had been 2 weeks because, you know, that's how time works. So we need some sort of topic, don't we? So we're flailing around trying to find a topic to talk about. And Peter said, well, actually, there's one element of selling which we never talk about. We talk about buying things all the time, but what about the selling of them? Well, Peter, you absolute genius. Forget the fact that, you know, my abandoned barnyard of a brain has got no ideas in it right now. That is the best idea we've got, so we're going with it. So the theme, if you like, of this week's episode is all about how to know when to sell shares, having some sort of a framework for selling them. And, you know, I've talked to a lot of members of the audience over the years about why selling actually, for me, is the hardest bit of investing. And it's the hardest bit of investing for a lot of you guys out there as well. We can all run around finding great things that look shiny, you know, new companies that are going to cure cancer or squirrel investments or whatever it is this week. But how the heck do you know when to sell them? And, you know, I was talking about this with a friend at lunch, and he said, "All right, Henry, it's easy, right? You buy it when it's low and you sell it and you make money on it." Oh, I said, "You know what? I mean, if it was as simple as that, we'd all be millionaires, wouldn't we?" Buy it when it's low and sell it when you've made money on it. But thanks for that. But we all know that actually, how do you know? I mean, you know when you've literally made £1 of profit, but how much do you know you could make? So if you come back to this £10,000 investment, the fictional investment you were going to give me earlier in the episode, Peter, you're 10 grand and I'm going to give you 14 back. How much would you kick yourself if the guy next to you gave me 10 grand, then the day after I gave him 18.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code TWINPEETS. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free, and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe today using the Twin Peaks promo code and you can save up to £69. Visit shareScope.co.uk for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
You'd go mental. If I just waited another day, I could have had another £4,000. What was I thinking? So you come back and you give me another £10,000 and you go, right, this time I'm going to wait. And I come back to you the next day and I go, well, actually, Peter, this time, you know, the squirrel investment, it went a bit wrong. The squirrels, actually, they've all died. And you've lost your money. So I'll give you £5. Now, you think you've made what seems like a rational decision there. You know, you've looked at the first investment and you realised that you sold too soon. You pulled the trigger too fast. You've made the investment a second time and you've waited and you've lost money on it. And it's that uncertainty that causes us to pause. And I wanted to kind of talk around this with you on the episode a little bit, because how do you sell when you sell? Because I find it incredibly difficult.
I have a multitude of different scenarios that I run, Henry. We spoke earlier about the M&A side of it and the sum of parts side of it as well. So when I've identified a stock using intrinsic value, I've earmarked what I think it should be worth. And so I have examples where I've worked out it out to the nth degree, spent X amount of hours trying to analyze all the different reports on it, and I've got the value of the stock. So I'm waiting for the bargain basement price. It's usually because it's hit a 52-week low or a multi-year low or something like that. And I'm waiting for a catalyst to see what the catalyst is and will be for that stock to start being re-rated. So I've got my price up here regarding what I want for that particular stock. I purchase the stock and then I'll just sit and wait. I don't have to share the information with anybody. I'll just sit and wait. Don't need to disclose it. Don't need to ramp it to anybody. Don't need to talk about it on the pod. I can just sit and wait 6 months or a year. However, Henry, as you will know regarding some of the stocks that we've held and investment companies we've held, it doesn't matter how much research you do, you'll never know the real value of something and how well the management are executing. Yeah? So I have this sort of strategy whereby I have to give the stock a minimum of 6 months, irrespective of what sort of news has come. Yeah? Unless it's an absolute profit warning from hell, yeah, I am going to give it a minimum of 6 months. And I'll just say, right, okay, the markets are doing what they're doing right now. This is going on right now. This has been a catalyst. It should start moving on from now. Yeah. However, if that catalyst was a false catalyst, Henry, and what I bought it for that £10,000, and it's now at £1 a share, and I bought it, £10,000 was walloped on it, the share price goes to 75 pence. I'm looking and thinking, right, okay, has that strategy or that what the company said they were going to do, is that failed now? Has the management completely lost the goals that they said they're going to achieve, are now being moved back more than 6 months, a year, 2 years, for them to hit that point that they said, we're going to hit that in December 2025, Peter. Well, not to me, to all shareholders. And then they get to October and they say, oh, this has happened. Tariffs have happened. That's happened. Da-da-da. We're now going to push that back 6 months. I'm thinking, you know what? At 75 pence now, I'm not going to sell. I'm going to give them another 6 months and see if they hit that target. The share price goes to 65 pence. I'm thinking, do I add some more here now or do I get out because I've got over 30% loss on that particular company? And they haven't shown any signs yet of any momentum. So there's a question mark about it. Yeah. I don't mind keeping the stock and selling it. Keeping the stock or selling it. I'm quite flexible. It depends on the company, it depends on the management. It depends on Also, Henry, am I getting paid a dividend whilst I'm waiting? Yeah, that could be just 3%. You know, it could be 5%. I'm thinking about whether or not I'm going to get a dividend whilst I'm waiting because that compensates just a little bit. Because actually, incrementally, I can be getting a few more stocks from that dividend that's coming in. But if the profit warning is such that it's fundamentally changed what the company can achieve for more than 9 months to a year, I'll move on and I will sell the stock. Because for me, the profit warnings could come in twos, they invariably come in threes, and the management have got it wrong, so wrong that the share price has gone down 25% on that massive profit warning. It's going to take some significant change of heart for that share price to get back to where it originated from and above that in the next 6 months to a year. I've drawn up a little chart here, Henry, and this is something that you need to keep an eye on regarding the losses. And I'm sure people have seen all these charts before. And I'll move beyond the initial smaller ones and move straight to a 20% loss. So if you're selling, and this is the reason why people find it so difficult to sell. You bought the share price, it's fallen by 20%. To get just back to break even, the share price has to go up 25% for you to get back to break even. Yeah? You double that, you get to 40%. You bought it at a pound, it's now at 60 pence. But the share price to get back to a pound, it has to go up 67%. You see why it gets so difficult? People are hanging on. They're down
Yeah, you see,
40%, but they're hanging
I've got to
on.
stop you. I've got to stop you here because I know where you're going with this one, and I've heard we've discussed this one before. And originally, when I first started investing, I agreed with I. The math is the math. Math works, right? That's how math works. The bigger the loss gets, the harder it is to get back to where you started.
Yep.
But that's concentrating on the price.
That is concentrating on the price.
And jumping
But what
to
you're
a
thinking
pound
about
doesn't
is
mean you can't go back up 60% to get there.
it can go, and stocks have done that. They've absolutely just gone. You know, you look at the like Apples of
And
the
this
world, the Amazons of the world.
this is my point. Because
But
if you
you,
can't, if you
but and but Henry, but we in the UK, right? The US tech stocks and the behemoths that I'm just giving examples of. They've gyrated and they've moved around significantly. Drawdown's massive. And they've gone doubled, trebled, gone on from that. There was a point where Apple was on the precipice of just going out of business. Yeah. There was times when Jeff Bezos and Amazon were going, not sure what we're going to do tomorrow, but just keep faith. We'll be fine. And people went, not so sure about that. I'm off. I'm going to go. And now, where are they now? I'm not saying we don't have companies like that in the UK that can rebound from a massive loss. I'm saying we tend to be less sticky as investors, you know, me included. Certain times when I see certain profit warnings, I'm going,
Yeah,
that's it, I'm done.
but this is my point. So the it's on it's about being realistic about what you're doing. So the I want to just rewind just a little bit to what you were saying about the profit warnings, because to me that's the critical bit. What you're really saying here is it's not about you've given them 6 months, the price has gone down. It's gone down 40%, it can't go back up. That's not really what you're saying. What
And
you're
that's not what I'm
actually saying
saying.
is
Yeah.
you've owned them 6 months, they've had a profit warning, the share's gone down 40%. Because the underlying business now isn't operating the same way. We
Operating
said
well.
we were going to do 10 million in revenue. Actually, we're
Yeah.
going to do 4 million. We said we were going to be profitable this year. Actually, that's probably looking like 18 months out, and we've never been profitable before. We said we were going to achieve a positive return on capital. Actually, we've still not been able to do that, and we've never done it before. And the shares have gone down. Now, that story. Yeah, in that scenario, I can totally go, yeah, this going up another 60% from here. Come on, it's more like to go 60% down further from here, based on that narrative. But
Absolutely. And
what if
all
the underlying story is different? What if the share price has gone down 40% and they say, yeah, but we hit our revenue target and we hit our profit target and we've hit our return on capital employed target and the shares have still gone down 40%, then what do you do?
you'd have to consider all the different optics on it, Henry. as to
Oh, you
why
dodger.
what as no as to why it had gone down. There's a reason why the share price has gone down. Maybe it's just a general market, Henry. Go back to
There
lockdown
you
days.
go.
All those stocks are 30, 40, 50% down. Bosh, bosh, bosh. We don't have to go back that far. We can go back to
Can go back to 6 weeks
the
ago.
4th and 9th of April of this year, right? I've put out two examples this week or just yesterday regarding Jupiter Asset Management and Premier Miton. One's up 50% since April lows, one's up 40% since April lows, both paying chunky dividends. And I just held them. I was like, I'm not taking any notice of that. Yeah. And I just kept them because nothing had changed regarding the company. What had changed was the tariff noise and people just going, oh, I'm selling the market. I've gone 40, 50% cash. I'm getting out of the market. Literally yesterday, we're literally about 100 points away from all times high on the FTSE. No one talked about it yesterday. Yeah. We're back
No.
there at 8,800
But
and no one mentioned it.
that's exactly my point. So
So if the
that
fundamentals
framework
have
of
not changed, if a company comes out and says there's an accounting error or we've just sacked our CEO, I'm like, whoa,
very
whoa, whoa,
different.
whoa, whoa,
You're
whoa.
very, very
There's
different.
very different stuff going on there. Yeah. So sometimes you
You've
just,
got,
sorry, go on.
I was going to say, you've got different scenarios for what causes the price drops. And this comes
Absolutely.
down to the psychology of it, because when you see the price drop, I think what most people see is and this sounds stupid, you see the price drop. Jesus, I put $10,000 in this yesterday. I've now got 6,000. My wife's going to kill me. The squirrels are going to eat me alive. I've got to stop the bleeding, right? I'll sell it. Likewise, when you see a profit, you go, oh, look, I've got £4,000 in profit. I'd better get that off the table now, because if half of it disappears, my wife's going to kill me. You know, what am
Yeah.
I doing putting £4,000 profit at risk?
There is a sense though, Henry, at times, there is a sense at times when you and I are feeling euphoric about that holding we bought that's done ever so well over the past 1 year, 2 year,
That's
three
when
year,
you
four
get
year.
smacked in the
That's when you should be considering to take, not necessarily selling all of it, but taking some of it off the table. Don't sell all of it. And it's when we're going, oh, my portfolio is sitting at an all-time high, days on the beach are coming even closer. That's the time to take some off the table. You know, for traders, they're selling into the momentum, Henry. They're not trying to sell, press, sell, sell, sell when the market's going like that. Yeah, they're trying to sell as the market's going snaking upwards
And
sometimes.
it's that, you know, what you and I are talking about as well is a fairly dispassionate conversation about a theoretical investment. You've also got that very real thing called your ego. You've got one, I've got one, everybody's got one, right? We're
Yeah.
all a genius when we're managing our own portfolio. You know, when you click that button and you realize a loss, you're not a genius anymore. And there's no one
Oh.
else in the room other than you and that
Yep.
loss. And most of us will take an awful lot of mental gymnastics to avoid feeling that embarrassment, because we
Yep.
feel like it's a personal criticism of ourselves. You feel like, if I don't click the sell button, oh, I've not really made a loss. You know, I've not really incurred anything. It's not real until I've clicked the button. It's just numbers on a screen. And it's that sort of minimization of regret on the negative side. Whereas, again, to me, I try and I'm not saying I don't have those emotions. We all have those emotions. But I try wherever possible to focus my mindset on the business. If I wanted to own this
Yeah.
company yesterday, do I still want to own it today? And will I want to own it tomorrow? If the answer to that question is no, I need a rationale for it. Either it's weaker, or the sector's failing, or they've cut the dividend, or whatever. Right, in which case I just don't want this. I don't really care whether the price has gone up, down, sideways, or whatever. I just don't want it anymore. And I find that helps take me out of that fear of making a mistake, because you get the flip side when you've got the big gain. Oh, I made 150% on this. I've got one right now. I've got 150% profit on the table. I should sell it. I should sell it. But what if it goes up to 200%? What about 250? What if it's a three bagger? What if it's a five bagger? What if it's a 10 bagger? Oh, think how happy Verity will be with me if that's a 10 bagger. you start telling yourselves this crazy narrative in your head. I've not discovered the next Google. Come off it, right? Let's get real. Let's look at what's there. Like you say, let's take a little bit of money off the table. And it's that you touch on something really important. If we're talking about selling, talking about how to sell, selling in little bits sometimes helps ease us into making the right decision.
Indeed, and I think also we've got to get to the point where we go back to the fundamentals. And I see this so often regarding individuals that talk fundamentals all the time. When the share price goes off the charts and the PE is now a ridiculous PE, the fundamentals make perfect sense now. Well, the P, when you bought it, the PE was 16, 18. It's now a PE of 30 to 35, and it does this. It's not a tech stock. It's not an AI stock. It's not a computer software SaaS stock. It sells stuff. It's a retailer for all intents and purposes. But no, the PE is now 40, and I'm happy with it. Right. Okay. So would you buy it again? Yeah, I've been buying some more. A PE of 40, 45, you're buying some more. Okay. So the
And it's
fundamentals,
that.
Henry, sometimes when the fundamentals change and it gets overstretched or too pricey, that's another consideration to make as to this is now too rich. Yes, the share price can keep going higher. Yeah, but sometimes you go back to the conversation you were having about mistakes. Yeah, sometimes the mistake is selling too soon. Sometimes it's
It's
not
not
selling
selling at
soon
all.
enough, or selling at all. They go back. I'll pull this quote out because it's part of the article that I wrote some time ago. It's one of my favorite quotes. Investing success is two thirds avoiding mistakes, one third doing something right, by Ken Fisher. Yeah. So yeah, it's hard. It's the selling bit is the hardest bit, I think. And the psychology of taking the loss is it, you feel and it's everyone's all the research says you're impacted twice as much by the same percentage loss, yeah, as you would from getting the gain. So that's why it's so hard to do, you know. But sometimes it's the best thing to do. The company's CEO has changed. He or she's been sacked. There's accounting fraud. There's a profit warning. There's all these different things going on regarding that company. You and I were sat there looking at DJI 9, which, by the way, I've held my nose at and just had a little squeeze of it just last week.
You haven't.
Yeah,
I've just sold
I
one.
have. Yeah.
You and
There's something I
I
read about.
swear.
Yeah, something I read, Henry. Something I read. And I went,
You're out your
okay.
tree, mate. You
Yeah,
are out of
yeah.
your tree. You've just
Exactly.
bought some DJI 9.
Yeah.
Get out of here,
I
ladies and
pinched my
gentlemen.
nose across the pile of POS and I went, okay, let me just have a little nibble of
You
that.
are out of your
And
tree.
I will watch what goes on now because there's something I saw and I'm not going to share what it is. And I thought, yeah. Yeah. And when I was doing it, I thought, you sold that at 20 odd pence. It's now sitting at 8 pence. What are you thinking? So we'll see what happens, mate.
Oh,
It's a
mate.
zero to, it's a zero to five, or for me at the minute, 16.
You've probably just bought the shares I've just sold. And you're
Quite
welcome to
possibly, quite
enjoy.
possibly. But yeah, so and that again could be a mistake. You and I have looked up at it so many times about it. So we have to be careful. The most difficult part of selling, I think, for most people, is their overconfidence in the narrative they had originally regarding the stock. Yeah, I've done all the research. Me, I've done all the research. I know everything to do with stock. Da-da-da-da. Share price is down 50%, Pete. Oh, but the management are going to get it right next week, next month, next year. Oh, share price down 75% now, Pete. What are you doing?
Well, that to me, I mean, and again, you come back to this idea of looking at the fundamentals, and I find it much, much easier to look at execution than listen to promises about what we're going to do tomorrow. So having
Absolutely.
pre-committed, pre sort of defined exit criteria. So if a business's earnings per share decline, I've not got a precise time limit on this, by the way. It's not like if they decline for 3 quarters or whatever, I'm out. But if your earnings per share are declining over time, don't like it. If your net asset value is declining over time, I don't like it. If your revenue's gone into reverse, I don't like it. if your profit margins have gone into reverse, I don't like it. I'm looking at the performance of your business. And you can tell me all sorts of dreams about what you're going to do tomorrow and how it's going to be better than today. But if for the last 2, 3 years this has gone into reverse, sorry, do it with someone else's money. Peter, he loves a turnaround story. Go take his money. But for me, I find it quite easy to look at those sort of companies and go, I just got this wrong. And maybe it'll turn around tomorrow, and some of them do after I've sold. And I don't really tend to sit there and go, oh, I wish I still owned it. Because with the information I had at the time, no, odds were 50-50 that this was going to turn around. And at that point, you're taking a gamble, and it's a bad bet. They've not done it for the last 3 years. Why do you think they're going to do it this year? You're just hoping.
There is a lot to say to with that, regarding that, Henry. I think that we as it's human nature really to not want to miss out on stuff. The FOMO element of I've heard other people buy it, talking about it. I've heard other people buying it. I tend to be a bit more contrarian, and the more people are talking about it, I'm trying to avoid it. People are making predictions as to what the price is going to be, and I'm going, nah, I don't care what the predictions are. I'm not interested in that. And it goes back to the storytelling narrative that we were speaking about a podcast or two ago about. I think the hardest thing is not to get caught up in the hype and all the other people going whoop whoop, all the cheerleaders are out telling you about the stock with the multiple accounts talking to themselves about the stock. And we've seen what's happened. You brilliantly gave some examples of some of those stocks. And we've seen one of the stocks, I think this week or in the last, the last week or so, Guild Esports became another company.
Is that
I forget what
still
name it,
going?
and now it's got a ticker called ALRT, and it's gone up something like 200 or 300% in the past week or so from whatever. And it's just the fact they've got a bit of money and they're going, what they're going into, is it I want to say uranium or something like that, but they've
Then
gone from
what?
where they were in esports to some. It was esports, Guild Esports, then it was called Cast something or other. Then it's called something with the ticker symbol
Oh, God.
ALRT, and the share price has gone from fractions of a penny to.
Ladies and gents, I've got a squirrel business you can invest in if you're interested in
Yes.
that.
New management, new narrative, a third change of
Yeah.
name in the space of, I don't know, 12 months, 18 months. And the share price, which is, I don't know, sub whatever market cap, and the share price is sub fraction of half a penny, is now starting to climb and go whappy. And I'm like, whatever. So
Yeah.
I'm going to share this with you, mate. This is Daniel Kahneman, brilliant writer. You've got to check out all his books. And he sums up this FOMO pretty beautifully. And when he states, wherever there is a prediction, there is ignorance, and probably more of it than we think. Does that sum it up, Henry? So short and
Yeah.
succinct for you?
Yeah. You're bang on.
Yeah, there we go. So on this, I suppose the caveat for me regarding selling goes back to your risk profile, what type of investor you are. We're going to exclude the traders now because the traders tend not to have very tight stop losses anyway. And sometimes you can be very mechanical and go, you know what? As an investor, I'm going to buy this stock. I want to hold it forever. However, I'm going to put my stop loss at 15%. I'm going to put my stop loss at 20%. And if this happens, I'll get out of the stock. I can watch it again and I'll buy it back if nothing else happens after that. If it comes up with some positive news, I'm even willing to buy it back at a higher price than I sold it because there's now better momentum, change of management, a catalyst, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
We psychologically, I think most investors hate buying anything that they sold for a pound and buying it back at £1.20 or £2. But what was then has changed. And sometimes you have to pay the piper because you missed the
Yeah.
opportunity or you weren't willing to keep it when it went, when you held it and it went to a pound. So there's all these different things to consider, Henry. Selling is the hardest thing, mate.
Yeah.
You know?
And to
And
me,
that's why we.
I am much, much, much more likely to sell. I would say the top reason for me selling a business is either, well, no, it is because the business has fundamentally changed and I no longer want to own it. not because of what the share price has done. Now, sometimes that's bitten me and bitten me hard, but more often than not, it's just saved me a lot of grief. And it's also made me money by making me leave alone businesses that are going up. I just keep my
Yeah,
hands off them. I let them do what they're doing. And even if they consolidate for a year and they go nowhere, and then the year after they suddenly shoot up again, they're still in my portfolio and it's fine. I've left them alone. Whereas I'm looking at the bottom of my portfolio going DGI 9. You know what? Peter might think this is going to bounce. I am done with this. This has given me so many headaches over the years now, right? I just do not believe anything management says. I'm done. And even if they liquidate this thing for 50p and I could have 5x'd my money from here, I do not want to gamble on that because I could go down to bookies and put it all on black.
You and I have been here so many times with so many stocks like that. And this is the beauty of us in thinking completely individually. You know, we're not married to a stock. We get to a point where we think, I've had enough, and I simply do not care. Once I've gone, I'm done. I do not care. I'll have another look again. Maybe on this occasion, I've gone back and gone, right, okay, there's something there that I saw that I'm not sure anyone else has seen. I'm going to have a little nibble at that. Not recommending it for anybody because it could equally go to zero in a blink of an
I am
eye.
actively discouraging anyone going anywhere near it unless you want a banging headache and a
I
hole in your wallet.
agreed. 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 So no recommendations on either of our parts. It's a punt. It's an absolute punt. And sometimes I think also, Henry, when a management company has managed an entity so poorly, you have to change the whole culture and management before the catalyst can occur. So keep an eye out on that and look out for new management and new individual CFOs, new CEOs going in, or even sometimes a chair person coming in who's got a wealth of knowledge that's going to bang some heads together and get some people doing things differently. So that's what I try and look at sometimes for a off the radar sort of catalyst for some companies. Doesn't always work. You know, I've been pied a few times. Most definitely. Right. Henry, Memphis, we've had a
Yes.
kind donation, another donation from Sanjay Kariya.
Another one.
Another one. He's a lovely fellow. We speak occasionally, and he understands and he gets what Memphis does, and he's made another donation this time. He's written, thank you for everything you do for the investing community, Pete and Henry. It's really appreciated. Long may it continue. He's donated £100 plus £25 gift aid. Takes our total to 1,872 plus gift aid. Sanjay, thank you ever so much, sir. We hope that Henry and I can thank you, give you a hug, and see you in person soon. Hopefully at the Investor Summit,
Investor
if not
Summit.
somewhere else in London. I'm sure we can sort something out regarding that. So, where can you find the Just Giving page? You can find it at www.justgiving.com forward slash page Peter dash Higgins. And that's for Memphis, not for Peter Higgins. It's for Memphis people. Any comments there, Henry?
Yeah, I mean, I think just before we wrap up, I'd just like to take a moment, and I know I say this, but bear with me because it really does matter. What we're trying to do with this charity fundraise for Memphis. It's a charity that's based in Leicestershire. So if you don't live in Leicestershire, you won't have heard about it other than through the podcast. But they support children and young people with disabilities, and they support their families through a range of really quite vital services. From respite care and activity groups and educational programs and even one-to-one to support for some of the most disabled. And for many families, Memphis really is a lifeline that they're holding on to, they're clinging on to, offering not just practical help, but actually a real sense of belonging, a sense of dignity and hope and community for these families and these people that are going through incredibly tough times for an incredibly long period of time. And I know we ask about this, and for many of you, I imagine, this sort of tunes out almost. But If you found value in the podcast, if you enjoy listening to me and Peter and the conversations that we share with guests like Sam, the work that we're doing with the Investors Summit and my blog and all the rest of it, I'd really encourage you to take a moment to support Memphis. You know, even a small donation can go a long way in helping a child to attend a support group or give a family like yours a much needed break. Or fund equipment that really changes a young person's day-to-day life in a way that you can't even imagine what a difference it makes. Now, Peter's given you the donation link. I share the donation link. And if you can't give right now, that's absolutely fine. You know, we understand that times are tough. Just spreading the word makes a real difference too. If you write back on social media or on LinkedIn, on Twitter, on Blue Sky, with a link to the pod. With a link to the charity page as well, and just say, I'd love to donate. What a great initiative. Other people see that message and they go and have a look at it. And hopefully, together, we can help raise that £5,000 for these kids and their families because Memphis does great work in the community. And we really do dearly want to support them this year with our charity fundraise. So thank you for listening. Thank you to Sanjay and everybody else that's donated so far this year. Thank you for your generosity and your time. And please do consider making a small donation when you tune in to this week's Twin Peaks Investing podcast.
Thank you very much for that, Henry. I'm conscious that we've been here for an hour and 20 minutes. I've got another stock which I was going to share. I can save it for the next pod if you want. I can just quickly tell people about the competition that they're going to be hearing about on social. Do you want me to do that, or do you want me to do both? What do you want me to do very quickly?
I think let's go for the share.
Oh, you want the share? Okay,
Let's go for the share. Go on,
right.
surprise me. Come on.
I'm a bit biased with this one because this is one of our larger sponsors of the Investor Summit, Henry. And that company is a platform which quite a lot of our listeners use. And the platform is an investment platform. And that sponsor of the Investor Summit is AJ Bell.
AJ Bell,
I'm
they
not
are
just
my
tap.
broker.
Oh,
But
dear, dear. Well, there you go.
we're really
So,
biased here.
with it, really biased. Yeah. So we've got a share price, Henry, at £4.98. The 52-week range is 355 to 529. So it's there at the top of its range. The PE, I've always thought it's a bit rich because AJ Bell, so therefore the PE has got to be a bit richer than others. It's sitting at 22. Yeah.
Yeah,
PE
it's
23 P.
rich because it's an awesome broker. Like, let's
Oh,
just
here
get
we
that
go.
out there,
Bit
ladies and
biased.
gents. They
Bit
are really
biased.
fantastic. Anyway.
Yeah, so a yield of 2.53. They came out with results on the 23rd, which was last Friday, if my brain is working correctly. I'm just going to find the tweet that I put out regarding it. And they came out and report interim revenues up 17% to 153.2 million. Profit before tax was up 12% to 68.8 million. Earnings per share increased by 11%. Declared a dividend, interim dividend of 4.5 pence, additional £25 million share buyback, and their customer account was up by 51,000. So across all metrics, they were absolutely smashing it across the board. And for me, it's one of those sort of FTSE 250 stocks that always delivers. In fact, I might have that wrong. In fact, it might be a FTSE 100 company. I'm trying to remember the market cap of it. Can you find the market cap for me there, Henry? Because I forgot to put that on there.
Yeah, the ticker's AJB, isn't it?
AJB,
They
I think it's FTSE
are,
100. I'm sure it is.
they're a market cap of 2 billion.
So the FTSE 250,
Yeah.
yeah.
I
So I
mean,
was
you
right the
look at
first
it
time.
as a business. I mean, it's a phenomenal performer, this return on capital of 57%.
Yep.
Earnings per share forecast growth 17%. I mean, it's just green across the board. And this is one of these businesses. It listed in 2020 at £4 a share. It's paid out a dividend every year. It's now at £5 a share, so you've got the dividends on top of that.
Compounding.
This is one I sort of wish I owned a bit of. Hargreaves Lansdown, I sold just before the takeover offer. Annoyingly, didn't profit from that, but that's a story for another day. And I kind of wish I owned a bit of AJ Bell, if I'm honest. I don't own any. I'm not going to buy any, but it's a nice company, and I enjoy being their customer. So I'm quite happy to pay to be their customer. And I don't know many people that can say that about their broker.
That's a very good point, actually. It's a very good point. We had that period between April, sorry, late March, beginning of April, where the volatility in the markets were absolutely off the charts, wasn't there? So lots of trading going on, lots of selling going on, and then after the tariffs, yes, no, blah blah, but flinched lip, but it's like a daily tweet from Mr. Trump. All of that volatility, what did it do? Boosted their returns. So they've done really, really well. I suspect, Henry, you'll be looking at them at some point and they'll be £6 a share and they'll be in the FTSE 100. So we'll see what happens there. And it pays a reasonable dividend as you're going along. So we'll see what goes on with
Well,
that. So that's a
also
very quick. Sorry,
they've
go on.
grown into their PE. You know, you go back to 2021, they were on a PE of 37. They're now on a PE of 21. You know, the price to earnings growth ratio was 6.7. It's now 2.3. Little bit rich, but they are growing into this multiple. Their return on capital employed has gone up and up and up year after year. You know, this is one of these businesses that's doing very, very well. I think for me, you know, a little bit of the bear case here. There are free brokers out there. There's Trading 212. They don't charge you anything to have an account. They don't charge you anything to place a deal. Now, the spreads are wider, the FX costs are higher, but they're also free. So, how many young people are opening accounts on things like Trading 212 and using that instead of going to a traditional brokerage house like AJ Bell? So a little bit like active managers, I feel like there's some potential headwinds here over the long term.
I would say the younger element, even younger than you, Henry, sub 30. Going down to the early 20s, are predominantly on the trading 212s and free trade and all the other brand new sort of purely online, story driven sort of stock sort of platforms, are definitely getting that cohort. As I always say with some platforms, if it's free, you are the cost.
Yep, you are the customer. You
Yeah,
are
you're the
the
customer, but
product.
you are, yeah. You know what I mean? It's a bit like you, what are they getting from doing that? You mentioned the spreads.
The
They tend
spreads are
to be a bit,
huge. I mean,
they
and
can
people
be.
don't think about this, but and this is because they don't understand the back end of how a trading platform works. But somebody's taking the other side of your spread, and you've got a market maker sat in the middle. That's profiting every time there's buys and sells going on. If the spread's wide enough, they are just raking money in off you. You don't see it because you've only executed one side of the trade, but you know, it's there.
So essentially that £5 you've saved on that one transaction, that £10 you've saved on one transaction, depending on how much you bought, you've paid that in the actual
In the
widespread.
spread. Yeah. So where you would have had a thousand shares, you've actually got 990 shares because the spread's so wide.
Exactly. So yeah. Right. We've been here long enough. Very, very quickly, folks. Most likely be on the first instance on X, Twitter slash X. There will be a tweet going out probably Friday from the Investor Summit account, which you can find at underscore Investor Summit on X. There'll be a tweet, and what you'll need to do is follow the account. Retweet it and reply to it. And once you've done that, you'll be entered into a competition and it will only run for 1 week, until the following Friday for a pair of two tickets to the Investor Summit. All the names of the individuals that have followed, retweeted, replied will be entered into a little draw and we'll probably announce it on X, by the Monday of the competition closing, if not on the Friday afternoon, a week on Friday, after this coming Friday. Yeah. Does that make any sense, Henry?
It
All you have to
does.
do is just follow the account on X, retweet the tweet that goes out that says competition time, giveaway time, whatever it's going to say on it. And then involve yourself, retweet it, comment on it. And you'd be into a draw. We'll get hold of your Twitter handle, X handle, and say you've won it. You pass on the information. We fire two tickets to your way. And you can come to the show. That's it. Henry, you can't enter, by the way. Yeah.
No, I know. I'm on the stage. If I need a ticket, we're in trouble. I can't afford a
Yeah.
ticket.
There you go. There you go. Ladies and gents, another marathon. Henry, thank you ever so much, sir. Smash that. Thank you for sharing the, your hints, tips, and insights on Chesnara, as I pronounce it. And what was the other one? Global Data as well. I'm hoping Mr. SGS Cheney will appreciate the commentary that we've shared there on Global Data. Although we're both on different parts of where we what we would actually do. It's the whole point, isn't it? Make your own mind up. We've given some insights. You need to make up your own mind. We will look forward to seeing you, ladies and gents, on the other side, which will be June, getting nearer and nearer to summer. And although we had some really good days in the past week and a half or 2 weeks since the last pod. A big thank you again to Sam Bell, who was on the last podcast and smashed it regarding the commentary and insights. Some of our more trading friends really appreciated that. Great numbers for the pod again. And we appreciate that as well. If you like this podcast, if you appreciate some of the commentary from Henry and some of the insights we've both shared, please subscribe and follow us on all the different platforms that you listen to for us. And also on YouTube, pass some comments on there and follow Henry's account at HT Viola on X. And also follow his blog, The Ethical Entrepreneur, where he shares fantastic insights. Probably about twice a month you write something, Henry. Is that about on
About
average?
twice a month, yeah.
Yeah, ish. So please just follow that that blog as well, and follow us on Twitter. And we look forward to hearing more of you buying tickets for the Investor Summit, and also, of course, almost more importantly, supporting the disabled children that Memphis support. We will see you in June. Enjoy your week. And as it arrives, when this goes live, and we'll see you in 2 weeks' time. Take care, God bless, and look after friends, family, and loved ones. Thank you, Henry. Cheers,
My
buddy.
pleasure, Peter. Take care.
Take care.
Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit shareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.